video only, and you can choose which one works best for you. Now, the replay of this show will be available on BitChute, but it will also be available on Odyssey. And that is the front end for LBRY Library. Now, there is a full upload of every single episode of PWR available now on Odyssey or Library. And you can go there. You can sub the channel. I have three channels there. I have Mark Collett, which is all of my scripted videos that I upload on a Friday. I have Mark Collett Live, which is my live streams. That's my gaming streams. That's the book reviews. That's the movie reviews. That's the PA updates. All of those are on Mark Collett Live. And then I have a specific channel, which is just dedicated to PWR. And you can search that. It's Patriotic Weekly Review on Odyssey. The link is up on my Telegram. It's also in the Patriotic Weekly Review Telegram chat. You can find that. Please subscribe and please watch the videos there. They are all available. They are all in HD. It's a fantastic platform and it is very, very safe. There's no censorship there. And you can buy into their library tokens, which is their own cryptocurrency. And they are very soon adding streaming to their service. And when they add streaming, that is where we will be streaming, because they have a policy of not deplatforming people as long as people don't call for terrorism or violence. This is a fantastic new era for us. It means we can transition away from YouTube, transition away from DLive. Odyssey is a great place to be. And of course, so's BitChute. All of my other videos are up on BitChute. So, getting that out of the way, if you want to contribute to the show, please use Entropy. I am popping the Entropy link now into the chat on Trovo. You can also hopefully see it on DLive. Hopefully somebody will put the Entropy link in the chat on DLive. And you can also grab that on my Gab or from my Telegram. Now, that allows you to send super chats. It also allows you to ask unpaid questions. Now, you can watch the show through Entropy because it's embedded there. You can chat to people through Entropy and you can ask paid or unpaid questions. All paid questions get asked out live on the stream, and the best rated unpaid questions also get asked. Now, if you would like to contribute in other ways, you can contribute via crypto. There is a range of different cryptocurrencies that I accept. In fact, I accept them all. The most popular ones are up on my Telegram. They're up on my Gab. They are up on my Odyssey. They're up on my YouTube. They're up on my BitChute. And if you don't see the one you want or you have a problem, email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com and I'll be able to send you the correct crypto address. Or I can give you my bank details if you want to connect with me by sending me donations via bank transfer. You can also write to me with any of your problems, any of your comments, any of your suggestions. Many people do, and I try to get all emails answered within 24 working hours. Now, if you can do me a small favor and you can like and share this stream, that would make an absolutely huge difference, because obviously myself, Laura, Patriotic Alternative, we have all been deplatformed from almost everywhere. And obviously that is not a good thing. It means it's hard to get the message out to people. It's very difficult to get the message out. And it's very difficult to tell people when you are doing shows. So if you can do that, that would be greatly appreciated. Now, before we get into the show, before we go over to Jason, I've got a couple of things to tell people. Firstly, Richard the Lionheart has completed his epic walk across the length of the country carrying his flag. I'm sure he'll be appearing on a number of shows soon. I haven't spoken to him personally. I think he appeared on Jody K last night, but he'll be talking about that. So congratulations to him. Secondly, I have a video out on Friday, and that is about racial bias in policing and the way different murder victims are treated differently depending on the color of their skin, or more importantly, depending on the color of the skin of the person who murdered them. That will be up on BitChute, and I will be putting out the link for that around midday on Saturday. Now, we have one more thing to discuss before we get into the show. I am doing a special show on Saturday between midday and 2 p.m., and that is with a group of European nationalists who are hosting a chat with a Syrian nationalist who is going to be talking about the situation in Syria. I will be putting out more information on that shortly, and you can get involved with that. That will be on Trovo and DLive. It obviously won't be on YouTube for obvious reasons. So that is the intro. And now over to Jason. How are you, my friend? What have you been up to? And who is on tap this week?
Well, I am magnificent. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everyone present and watching in replay. This tap is on Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we are going to have the Golden One on with us. So it's going to be a magnificent stream. Please make sure that you do not miss it. We broadcast to so many different channels and so many different places that it's difficult to miss unless you go out of your way. I want to spotlight somebody in our community that's making great content, and that is Nordic Frontier, Andreas. And I will drop his link in the live stream over the course of the stream. But I really got to say that this past Sunday was really spectacular, because during the Going Free stream, we had another person, a young man, I'll just say his first name, Blake, who in the live chat told us his education, very educated, having some troubles in life getting by, white male, hated, of course, having a hard time finding a woman to be a wife and mother to his children. And that as his particular profession where he's educated gives him a great deal of knowledge in chemicals and pills and the like, and he had figured out a way to kill himself painlessly with the pills, and that's what he was going to do until somebody introduced him to Going Free. And he's gotten the book, he's Going Free, and he told us he's now off the path to suicide. I never like to put a number on these sorts of things, but that is number 8 during live shows that have announced that they have been on the path to suicide and then changed. The one just before Blake, of course, was a wonderful young lady who had actually written the note, the suicide note, and had the day that she was going to commit suicide. Now, this makes a hero out of Blake for having the courage to come forward and say something that is so very embarrassing and difficult to say, that you get to this point in life where you don't want to be alive anymore. Making a hero of him because of anyone else who might be in a similar or maybe not even that bad of a state, but hear that somebody was in that bad of a condition. And because somebody had the courage to stand up and say what they said about getting off of that path, that they too will be able to get onto a healthy path. It also makes a hero out of the unnamed person who introduced Blake to Go Free and all the possibilities there of self-improvement, dominating the anti-whites in your environment, changing the minds of people in your life with lexicon and dialectics that actually work, and then going on to access more of your potential, reclaiming your family and your community. And so a big hats off and salute to him, that hero, and the hero who gave him or introduced him to Go Free. And that was Blake. I'll pass it back.
Thank you very much. And that is fantastic news. I know that you spend an awful lot of time helping people, and that is part of what this movement's all about. This movement isn't about wallowing in a pit of depression. It's not about attracting a group of slobs or misfits or miscreants. It's about helping our people achieve their potential and raising people up. Nationalism isn't just about getting rid of different people. It's not just about freeing our nations from foreign influence. It's about raising up our people and immersing them in their traditions and their culture and helping them to achieve their goals. So well done, Jason. Now on to our special guest. He's one of my favorite guests. I always love having him on. And originally, his first appearance, he was drafted in because somebody got all uppity about appearing on the show. Keith came to the rescue, and he was a much better guest than the person we had previously scheduled. And since then, he has been a regular contributor to the show. He's already agreed to be one of the many guests on the 4-hour special for the 100th episode. And I've been really looking forward to having him on tonight. And I couldn't believe my luck when we managed to book him on St. Patrick's Day. He produces some of the best content. He's been a trailblazer, building a massive following on alternative platforms like Odyssey and BitChute. Here is the indomitable Keith Woods. Hello, my friend. How have you been? Tell people where we can find you and give your work a little plug.
Yeah, it's good to be here. That's a nice introduction. I'm not worthy. You can find me on YouTube, Keith Woods. You'll find all my links in the description. And yeah, like Mark, I encourage everyone to get over to Odyssey, LBRY. I think that is the future. I think people are accepting now that we do have to move to alt tech. I think the illusion that we could kind of beat the enemy on their own platforms and that they'd give us all the infrastructure to do it is people have moved on from that. But finally, we're not moving over to clunky, half-baked websites where, you're begging people to use it just to sort of be part of some kind of dissident movement. Suddenly, we actually have technology that can compete with these mainstream platforms. I mean, Telegram is the most downloaded app in the world now. It's completely overtaken WhatsApp. It eventually will probably overtake Twitter. And as you said, we have Odyssey now. I'm quite optimistic on that front. And as Mark said, hopefully everyone will make accounts on those and follow people over there. And yeah, it's good to be here.
Well, I've only been on Odyssey a couple of weeks, or maybe less than that. So I'm lagging behind in terms of subscribers. I'm doing pretty well on BitChute, but if you could help me out on Odyssey, that would be very much appreciated. So thank you in advance for that. Now let's get into the show. We've got a lot of things to discuss tonight. Obviously, the biggest news in the last week has been the kidnap and murder of Sarah Everard. And this has blown up to a ridiculous degree. Now, I know this is a tragic case, and I'm not detracting from the tragedy of a young woman being kidnapped and murdered. But the kind of response we're seeing to this is akin to what we saw with the case of George Floyd in America. We are now seeing vigils and protests. We are seeing the police being attacked for policing those vigils and protests. And we're already seeing this kidnap and murder being discussed in Parliament and new legislation being passed. To say this is astroturfed is an absolute understatement. Now, Keith, I've seen you commenting a little bit on this. What were your initial thoughts when all of this blew up? And what do you think to the response from liberals, politicians, and the media?
Well, I mean, it's all very familiar, isn't it? I mean, if you just look through crime cases and shootings and so on, you look at the news even the last few weeks, and there was like a lenient sentence was given to a Muslim woman that beheaded someone in the UK. There was a pizza delivery driver in Luton that tried to kidnap six people in one day. So, I mean, these stories are obviously, they're always happening, but they're rarely reported on. And, this was in the news somewhat, but it was only when it became clear that the perpetrator was a white man that it suddenly took off and became this big astroturfed social movement. I think we're actually seeing the same thing in the US today. You know, there was this shooting in Atlanta. This guy shot up I think they call it a spa, but it was a brothel, and I think he killed eight prostitutes. Six of them are Asian, so they're actually trying to frame this as white supremacist terrorism. They're trying to make Asians the victim. He actually said quite clearly, apparently, to the police and in a Facebook post that it wasn't racially motivated. He was a weird sort of sex addict. He's another one of these people that has kind of been thrown on the scrap heap by our society. There has been a story for the last few weeks, actually, in the US, which is there's been this huge increase in black on Asian violence. Maybe Jason can talk about this, but, Asians have been publicizing this. There's been, brutal attacks. A guy just got sentenced for beating a 74-year-old Asian shop owner to death. Asians have been forming sort of activist groups around this. So, it kind of makes sense now that as soon as there's a white guy that's not at all motivated by race, that clearly has other issues, that now they're going to try and spin this and turn all of the Asian victimization that's been grown the last few months into another attack on supposed white supremacy. I mean, if you want an example of like how this stuff goes under the radar, I mean, just last week, probably most people didn't even hear about this. Just last week, a guy called Raymond Ronald Lee Childs, who's a black man, killed 5 people, including a pregnant woman in Indianapolis. I mean, this was, you know, maybe this was reported in the US and places, but I didn't see this anywhere in terms of British or Irish media, anywhere in European media. So, yeah, I mean, it's not exactly a groundbreaking take, but yeah, this stuff is happening all the time. There's huge racial violence from blacks and from other immigrants, especially in the UK, you know, Muslim migrants and so on. But, you know, something like the Sarah Everett thing serves a political purpose, and that's why we're hearing about it so much.
Well, I found this very telling. It's very similar to what happened in America with the George Floyd case. That was used to pass new legislation. It was used to demonize entire sections of society. It was used to change the law, and it was used to basically springboard these astroturfed movements into the public eye. And what we're seeing here with the Sarah Everard case is an insane attack that is being leveled primarily at, I would say, white men. And I would say that this particular case is one that they've been waiting for. Because here in Britain, we've seen huge, huge numbers of attacks on women and girls from people of immigrant descent or from ethnic minorities. This has been something that's been very, very regular. Obviously, you can't ignore the fact that hundreds of thousands of white girls, many of them underage, were groomed, sexually assaulted, and raped by Muslim men. Yet none of that was met with these kind of protests. You didn't have women stood outside kebab shops in Rotherham protesting. You didn't have women outside taxi ranks or in taxi ranks at Telford demanding answers. You didn't have memorials to these girls in northern towns where hundreds or thousands of women were stood wailing and crying and throwing themselves at the ground, proclaiming the injustices of being a female in multiracial Britain. None of that happened. In fact, I've got to say this. When I used to be on Twitter, I would often post up stories about grooming. And every time I did, you would have some snarking liberal, often a snarking liberal feminist, asking why I was posting those stories, asking how they were relevant, asking whether, you know, I thought these things were commonplace, because in their opinion, these were small problems that were in no way indicative of the Muslim community. These were outliers, not actually something that could be seen as a trend amongst these immigrant groups. Now, obviously, I feel completely differently about that. And I think when you look at the facts, you can see that there was a trend of grooming within these Muslim communities. But these liberals, these feminists, these leftists, they didn't want to know about that. But now they want to know. Now a white woman has died at the hands of a white man, allegedly. It's very important to note that Wayne Cousins at the moment is still only a suspect in the case. I know he's remanded in custody, but he is still only a suspect. But now the alleged killer is a white male. All hell is breaking loose. And they are calling for, well, insane new legislation. Now, the first thing that we saw in this case was the following. And I'm going to put this horrible woman on the screen, Baroness Jones. She is the only Green Party member of the House of Lords. She's the only Green Party person, I think, who's got a seat. Yeah, definitely the only Green Party Lord in the country. She made a speech saying that all men should have to abide by a 6 p.m. curfew. That was her suggestion. Now, imagine after the wave of grooming that took place in this country, this wave of sexual assaults where white girls were the victim and the overwhelming majority of the perpetrators were Muslim men, if somebody like myself or Tommy Robinson in this case would be a good example. I know he's not our best friend, but if somebody like Tommy Robinson had said, well, we think Muslim males should, you know, have a 6 p.m. curfew, he'd have probably been arrested for saying that. And if he wasn't arrested for saying that, he'd have been ridiculed. But isn't it amazing how when one white man does something wrong, essentially all white men do something wrong. What do you think to this, Keith? And what did you think to the insane comments by Baroness Jones?
Yeah, I mean, this is another one of those things. It's like you think it can't get any more ridiculous in terms of how far it'll go with this stuff. And then you see a news story like this. But yeah, as you say, I mean, I was seeing reaction to this from journalists on Twitter where, one proposal was like that they're going to put plainclothes police officers in bars at night to keep women safe. And then there was journalists saying that, well, you know, what kind of solution is it to put more predators in the bars, you know, saying that policemen are predators. And yeah, it's like, I mean, well, if you're the politically correct narrative now, the accepted narrative is that all white men are predators, basically, which, you know, if it's like, well, if you want to take like a fact-based approach to this, then you're going to say that it's okay to put a curfew on men because they commit more of these crimes. You know, you might get some stark reading if you look at the racial statistics on that. But yeah, I mean, I don't know how serious that proposal is, but you know, none of this stuff would surprise you at this stage, especially with the powers they have now from COVID and so on. I wouldn't be at all surprised if more and more of this stuff is rolled out explicitly against white people and stop white people organizing. I think we're already seeing sort of early signs of that.
Well, it's not just, I've just got to butt in there. Sorry to interrupt you, Keith, but it isn't just plain-clothed police officers in nightclubs. They're doubling spending on streetlights and CCTV to 45 million. Now, this isn't just a massive expansion of police power. This is now a massive expansion of the surveillance state. This, the awful kidnapper murder of this woman has been weaponized so that they can justify this gigantic increase in surveillance, which isn't going to just affect men who want to kidnap and rape women. This is going to mean we're all monitored, everyone's monitored. And to me, I feel this, you can really draw some parallels with nations that were in the old Soviet bloc. You know, can you imagine undercover police officers in every bar and every pub and every nightclub and in the odd restaurant, all listening to what everyone's saying, monitoring everyone? And then when you leave the restaurant or the bar or the nightclub, you're surrounded by CCTV. Everywhere you go, you're being watched. Everywhere you go, you're looking over your shoulder. He could be a plainclothes officer. They've got plainclothes officers everywhere now. This is an absolutely massive power grab, as far as I can see. And you make a very interesting point. We're coming off the back of COVID, where you've seen the government grant itself greater powers than any king or monarch in the history of Britain has ever had. This government has more power than any monarch that's ever reigned over this country. No monarch in the history of Britain has ever had the power to force people to stay in their homes and abandon their businesses. That's never, ever happened. So this government's given itself these huge reaching powers and behaved in a completely tyrannical fashion. And we're not even out of that yet. And they're announcing £45 million for new surveillance and police officers sat everywhere listening to our conversations. How do you view this? Is this creeping communism?
Well, you know, what it reminds me of is the early 2000s with the hysteria about terrorism. I think we're heading for kind of a new moral scare. You know, you had the big scare about communism, the Red Scare in the 60s and 70s. You had terrorism in the 90s and 2000s. I think white nationalism is going to be like their new moral scare that they're going to present as a huge imminent threat to the West, that they're going to present it as way larger and more dangerous than it is. And I think, you know, in the same way terrorism was used to justify things like the Patriot Act, foreign wars, increased military spending, taking away people's rights, the growth of the deep state. I think that they'll use the scare of white terrorism to justify all of those things on an even greater level. Because, I mean, I think you can't really underestimate how sort of shaken these people are from the Trump victory. I think they're still reeling from that, from the realization that, you know, there's still a lot of white people in these countries, and that, you know, they, on some level, they know that they're doing policies to displace and harm us. And, you know, even if it's like subconscious, I think they know that, you know, they know that they're harming us in that way. And I think there's going to be, tightening of control. There's going to be more overreach. They're going to try and find these stories to justify this kind of thing. I mean, another example was, you know, when there was a terrorist attack in Vienna last year. And the response of the Austrian and French government was they started putting forward legislation to ban encrypted communication. Now, you know, I think that that's much more intended to target nationalists. You know, it's I think they're much more concerned about nationalists and the right using things like Telegram and so on to escape big tech censorship. But that's an example where they'll use the threat of terrorism, they'll use this existential threat, even if it's not from white people, and they'll use it to try and harm white people. So I'm sure we'll see a lot more of that in the next few years.
Well, Jason, you must be sitting there, you're in the US, this is a very UK-centric discussion, but have you heard of this case? Have you heard of the case of Sarah Everard? Has it got to the other side of the Atlantic?
Actually, it hasn't. I have not specifically heard of that particular case, but I have heard about this absolutely lovely dove of a woman who wants to prevent men from being out beyond a certain hour. And I guess this stems from this particular case. And it makes perfect sense to me. There are a couple of things that you all have been talking about that I'd like to speak to. First of all, I guess we're governed by what we refer to in Going Free as the anti-white narrative. It's a fictional narrative that the anti-whites create in their news and entertainment media. This is why you have conversations, and also, of course, at university, because fed by the same entities and the same ideology as the news and entertainment. You have these conversations with people where you say, well, why aren't you out protesting against the crimes against our women by these hordes of people? Well, the reason why, these anti-whites, the reason why is because for them, that's not the real world. The real world is the news and entertainment that they receive. Subconsciously, their subconscious minds cannot tell the difference. They don't see on entertainment the hordes of this anti-white / non-white group attacking our women. They see hordes of white males. The typical, everyday, clean-cut white male ends up being the chainsaw murderer. And so for them, that's reality. When you're talking to one of these people, that's reality. They don't know the difference between your stats. They just think they're false. That's why when you go up and you ask these people, how many times do you think that police officers have murdered unarmed, name some non-white race? And they'll say something like 20,000 times this year. Well, that's because it's happened that many times on news and entertainment television. That's what you have to accept. This is why it's the right lens to look at this world with. It's an anti-white narrative. And when things happen, they mold them, they ignore them, they write them in the sky. They do whatever they need to do to make them comport to that anti-white narrative in every single case. Now, what's going on in Georgia, what happened in Georgia with this guy, he was obviously some sort of pervert. And I don't know if in the UK or elsewhere around the world, they have what is called, and they didn't in the US, at least I didn't, hadn't heard of it until we started seeing these massage parlors that were run by people with different bio spirits than our own. This thing called, this absolutely disgusting thing called a happy ending. And that's exactly what this sort of environment was, where they run with a legitimate license to be able to give a massage. But then at the end, as long as they know you, you're not a police officer, you're not an informant or whatever, then for whatever extra money, they will give you this added illegal service. So this was a crazy person, but of course, he's white and they're non-white. So how are the anti-whites going to tell the story? It's predictable every single time. It's no use complaining about, well, they're going to do it again. There they go again. They're saying that it's another race-based crime when really it isn't. We should be talking to our brothers and sisters about how this happens, how the anti-whites think, why they do these sorts of things, so that the next time it happens, our brothers and sisters will see, well, geez, those folks that I talked to before, they were exactly right. This is about an anti-white narrative, and they're going to make it conform either by lying, manipulating, retelling, drowning, burying underfoot, writing in the sky, the story, whatever it takes to make it conform to the anti-white narrative. Now, when you have these non-whites who are harming other non-white people, and I'll point out, I don't know if Keith is aware of this, but the Asian community in the United States are blaming white people for this. And that perfectly fits. It makes perfect sense that one non-white group being attacked by another non-white group would blame the white race, because that is the demon group in the anti-white narrative. You can't blame, you can't accuse that they can specifically, individuals can say, well, they're angry with this other non-white group. But on a societal level, they are not going to allow that to happen. So the Asian community did get out and they had marches against the anti-white slurs of white supremacy and racism and all of this garbage that is in their panoply of slurs that they use to destroy us. It's a good sign when these groups start fighting each other, because we call this the event horizon. And it means that a number of things are taking place across society. And the fact that they harm each other means that we're getting closer to a point where we are no longer seen. And it's incrementally, it's percentage-wise, it's different for every single group, where we are no longer seen as the impediment to their group enrichment and therefore individual enrichment. We have to appreciate the fact that all of the non-white races have this in spades better than us. And that is that they know that their individual well-being comes by way of their group well-being, which is why we need to be talking about everything that they do as anti-white, so that we can finally beat it into our thick skulls that our individual well-being comes by way of our group well-being. And the final thing I'll say is that you're talking about the massive increase in the CCTV cameras and the lighting and et cetera. This perfectly matches with our predictions about the event horizon. The more multiracialism you bring into an environment, different biospirits are incompatible, and they, by centrifugal force, try to fly apart. You create a cultural arms race when you have a number of people together, and there is only one option for the governments of the West, and that is increasing surveillance and punishment for thought, for everything. So the non-white races are by way of just being collateral damage, they are going to suffer the increased surveillance as well. They are going to suffer increased punishment as well, when it's not, of course, targeting a white person. But that is the only thing that the governments can do to try to hold together what has never been done in the history of the world. And that is to bring different biospirits, different races together, and have them form some sort of eudaimonia, some sort of harmony, and without this sort of force. Everyone has tried. Genghis Khan made the best attempt and brutalized people to keep them behaving, and it still didn't work in the end. So I predict more of that, and more surveillance, and more brutalization of the white race, and more taking of these stories where somebody gets a paperclip cut from a white person, and then they're going to blow it up into, well, this is, and then writ large, the anti-white monster that we've been talking to you about all along, and we need to punish white people, the avatars of the entirety of the race, people like Mark Collett, Keith Woods, Jason Kerner, and the rest. Pass it back.
Thank you, Jason. Although you did use the term happy ending far too many times, the DLive chat was hilarious. I was almost reduced to turning off my camera then due to the quality of the comments in the DLive chat. Well done, guys. Well done. Keith, what are your thoughts on what Jason's just said?
Yeah, I'd agree with all of that. I mean, one thing, I can't say this for sure, but it seems to me that the Asians of all the immigrant groups to the West seem like the people that are least on board with the anti-white narrative. There could be a few reasons for that. I mean, they're obviously a more intelligent ethnic group, but also they're coming from countries where the norm is ethnic homogeneity. And I mean, if you talk to like a Japanese person about feeling guilt for their imperial past or something, I mean, they'd laugh at you. But what was interesting is, as the violence was rising against Asians from blacks, suddenly you got this narrative co-opted by an NGO group called the AAPI. And what was interesting is California State actually flooded money into this group. They flooded like $1.4 million, and the Department of Justice started funding it. So what you have is, you know, you have this, you have this unrest, you have this growth in violence, and you get this NGO that's like explicitly anti-white that's putting out press statements about, that blacks are friends and blacks got a civil rights and this is all the fault of white supremacy. And you have a flood of money from government and from legislature going into this to co-opt the narrative. So I thought that was quite interesting.
Well, I've got to give my perspective on this. When it comes down to it, white people have a pretty high IQ. On the scale of racial IQ, white people are quite up there. But we're actually not as high as East Asians. You tend to find people like the Japanese have a slightly higher IQ than we do. And where does that leave them? Well, they must be looking at what's happening in the West, especially those who live in the West. And they must be saying, this is a race to the bottom now. This isn't a race to the top. This isn't about raising people up. This isn't about searching for the best. This is about equality. And equality isn't about raising people up to the same standard, because that's impossible. You can't raise anyone up beyond the upward bound of their capability. There is no way you can turn an imbecile into a genius. It's impossible. It has never been done. It will never be done. It can never be done. You can't turn an imbecile into a genius, but you can turn a genius into an imbecile. You can do things to a genius. You can beat them. You can lock them in a darkened room. You can terrorize them. You can do lots of things. You can alter their diet. You can do all manner of things to a genius to reduce the genius to the level of an imbecile. So if you've got 10 imbeciles and you've got 10 geniuses and you want equality, the only way you can achieve that is basically in some way reducing the intellect of the geniuses so they end up as imbeciles. And that is equality for you. And that's what's happened everywhere they've gone for this equality, whether it be Cambodia, the Soviet Union, communist China. That's what they did. They took out the intelligent people who thought outside the box and disagreed with what they said and shot them. That's what happened. And that's what they're going to do here. And you now have a situation where if a white person goes for a job, well, you've got to jump through all these extra hoops. And even if you jump through them, they probably aren't going to get the job because we have to meet a diversity quota. So you're seeing this incredible anti-white racism leveled at us at every step of the way. Wherever you go, in the public sector, in the private sector, it's leveled at us. And it's forced down our throats. And everything that goes wrong, we are scapegoated for. We are the problem. We are whiteness itself. Our very being is the problem. So where do you go with this? Well, if you look at examples, historical examples of white people being blamed for everything and white people being run out, a notable one is Haiti, the Haitian Revolution, the blacks and those of mixed race origin killed all of the white people and raped all the white women. And then eventually the few whites that stood with them, the few whites that campaigned for equality and sided with the blacks because they said they didn't like colonialism, they were also killed. And the white women who had taken black partners, they were also killed. So did you have a situation where equality was achieved? Did you get from this revolution some kind of utopia, some kind of wonderland, some kind of place where all the other races work together in harmony? No, you didn't. Very quickly, a new ruling class emerged. And the ruling class that then emerged in Haiti were people who were of mixed race origin, who had had white mothers or white fathers, and those were then scapegoated for the ills of the people who were not of mixed race descent. So those of mixed race descent were then slaughtered in the next wave of slaughters. That's it. You know, the next cull was people of mixed race origin. So they got rid of the whites. Then they got rid of the whites who helped them. Then they got rid of the mixed race individuals. And then they were left with equality, with no one else other than black people. That was it. That was Haiti. And these Asians, they're intelligent people. And they must be saying to themselves, you know what? We're here in the West and we're intelligent people. Well, if they get rid of all of the whites, if they destroy white society, we're going to be the ones that hold positions that require intelligence. We're going to be the ones that are, you know, running the banks, running institutions. We're going to be the accountants. We're going to be the ones who are best suited to being bookkeepers or officials. We're going to be the best ones at running a police precinct or organizing the library or being university lecturers. At which point, who is going to be the next group who are for the chop? Well, it's going to be East Asians. It's going to be people who are Oriental. And you're already seeing that in America. There has been a big increase in anti-Oriental violence from the black community. And it's a very obvious next step. If white people were to go, who would be the next target on the list for creating this utopia where equality is God? Well, obviously it's going to be the Orientals. What do you think to that? Am I off the mark or have I got a point there?
Yeah, no, you're definitely right. And I mean, you can see that, you know, the more intelligent Asians, the younger Asians that are going through the university system, you do see them adopting wholesale the critical race theory stuff, the anti-white stuff. Because, you know, as you say, you know, if you're fairly above average IQ and you're kind of a social climber, you have aspirations in terms of wealth and status and so on. Well, the whole system of incentives is geared towards that. If you embrace critical race theory and anti-whiteness and you signal about oppression and you sort of, you use black groups and their suffering to prop this stuff up, that you're going to succeed. You know, you're going to get journalism posts, you're going to get NGO posts and so on. And you do see a lot of Asian migrants to the UK and the US especially that do this. The whole system of incentives is set up to do that. But as you say, you know, eventually whoever takes the center is going to be on the chopping block. One just little detour, but I just wanted to get this out because I don't think a lot of people know this, but I think everyone's familiar with the Tiananmen Square protest, right? The guy that stood in front of the tank, that iconic thing. Not a lot of people know this, but how those protests actually started. You can look up Nanjing anti-African protests. It was China, because it was communist, had a scholarship program with sort of communist countries in Africa, with pro-China countries in Africa. And it was taking in African students into the university in Nanjing on a scholarship program. And there was, you know, there was stories of race mixing, and there was stories of these black students having Chinese girlfriends. And this actually, you know, there was rumor of one of the African students like attacking a security guard. And this turned into like a gang of the Chinese students organizing to attack the dormitories of the black students that lived there, and eventually turned into a 3,000 strong protest against the scholarship program, against the Chinese government bringing Africans into Nanjing. And that was actually what the Tiananmen Square protest came out of. So the first, you know, when it's funny how liberals like hold up Tiananmen Square as this great like sort of liberal uprising, these people that believed in Western values and so on. But how that started, and really like the first sort of collective movement against the state, was like a bunch of racially conscious Chinese people that didn't want black students being brought into China to race mix with Chinese people. So just kind of an interesting factoid people should look into. It never gets covered anywhere when Tiananmen Square is discussed.
Well, I'd actually heard that, but I didn't know whether it was true or not. So thank you for bringing that up. That is a very, very interesting point. Now, something else I wanted to bring up tonight. This is just moving away from the Sarah Everard case, but it's in the same ballpark in terms of the results it will have on the public. So what have we seen over the last 12 months? We've seen the government granting itself these excessive tyrannical powers due to this disease, which in 2020 killed a whopping 388 people in the whole of England. who are under the age of 60 and had no underlying health conditions. So this disease that isn't really the next Black Death by a long shot, the government managed to grant itself these tyrannical powers. Now we've got the Sarah Everard case, and the government is already talking, as we've seen, $45 million for street lighting and surveillance cameras. They're not saying how that will be split. I'm guessing a lot more of that will go on surveillance cameras than it does on street lighting. And we're also talking about plainclothes officers in pubs, clubs, restaurants, bars, listening into our conversations. And we are moving towards some kind of Soviet-style police state. And on top of all of that, people have been told that they must snitch on their neighbours, they must inform on their friends and relatives if they break COVID laws. Everything is looking pretty grim, pretty 1984. But one thing that we've always had has been the ability to protest against the government, protest against politicians, and voice our opinions. Well, thanks to Boris Johnson, that's going to be a thing of the past as well. And you've got to remember, this is all coming from a Conservative government. This isn't from some far-left government. This isn't from the Labour Party. This is from Boris Johnson's government. Boris Johnson to make protests that cause annoyance illegal with prison sentences of up to 10 years. Boris Johnson is set to pass a new law banning protests that are noisy or cause annoyance. The law also limits the right to protest outside the UK Parliament and carries a maximum sentence of 10 years. The legislation comes as London's police force comes under criticism for its heavy-handed response over the weekend to a vigil for the murdered woman Sarah Everard. So this is very, very interesting because the term causes annoyance or noisy is pretty far reaching, isn't it? It's a pretty open, to be honest. And I'm always very nervous when laws are drafted in a way that leaves a lot of room for interpretation. What is a noisy protest? Here's another one. The measures would make it illegal for protests to cause serious unease and introduce criminal penalties for people who cause serious annoyance. Now, it says that a Downing Street spokesman on Monday said the bill would not target people's right to protest peacefully and would instead focus on targeting people who used extremely disruptive tactics during demonstrations. Now, this is very, very interesting, though, isn't it? Because the first thing is it will limit people's rights to actually it will limit people's rights to do things outside Parliament, which for a start is an absolute scandal. Secondly, it will stop people who are protesting and, as they say, cause annoyance. Well, what is annoyance? How do you cause annoyance? What are you doing? Are you standing there holding a banner that somebody else doesn't like? Would you say a protest that is primarily engaged in raising awareness of the grooming scandal, would that cause annoyance to the Islamic community? Would that cause annoyance to liberals? Who defines annoyance? Who defines what is noisy and what is peaceful? I think this is a massively open-ended piece of legislation that will be used to prevent any protest that the government doesn't approve of. And we've seen this during the whole COVID lockdown nonsense. Black Lives Matter are allowed to protest. And we all know what happened in the 1930s. The British government passed legislation that prevented Sir Oswald Mosley and the British Union of Fascists from wearing political uniform in public. The British Union Fascists were known as the Black Shirts. They wore very smart political uniform. That was basically like their calling card. That was a very defining thing for the British Union of Fascists. Now, interestingly, the government said it was illegal. You could not wear political uniform in public, and this was passed under the Public Order Act. Now, during last summer's BLM protests, not only did all those protests break the COVID law, but we saw militant black groups walking through London or marching through London in a military fashion, wearing political uniform, berets, armbands, etc. And they weren't challenged, and they certainly weren't prosecuted under the Public Order Act for doing that. And you can see how these pieces of legislation are drafted in an open-ended way and applied selectively to different groups. Now, what do you think of this, Keith? What do you think of this new piece of legislation? It has been passed. I believe Labour voted against it, but the Tories went all in on it, and obviously they've got a majority, so they won. How do you feel about this? And can you draw any historical parallels here too?
Yeah, you know, it's really disturbing. There seems to be more and more of this lately where there's legislation introduced that's just so vague that it's basically up to the police officers or whoever is in charge that they can, you know, they can persecute someone for basically anything they want. I mean, again, this is like we've seen precedent for this with the COVID stuff where, as you say, you know, in Ireland is a case of it. There was a protest against the lockdown a couple of weeks ago, and there was a huge backlash, multiple arrests. Supposedly there was 16 arrests in Ireland today by police officers. But yeah, you know, there was a huge Black Lives Matter protest in Dublin last summer. There was like 6,000 people walking through the city centre of Dublin. All this stuff gets ignored. And yeah, it's setting a precedent for this kind of anarcho tyranny where the law is enforced very harshly on certain people and not for others. I mean, to be honest, what it makes me think of is, and I mean, this is like one of the most disturbing cases I saw, is that report that was released recently in the UK that was targeting yourself and PA. I can't remember the name of the report, but I mean, the language used in that was ridiculous. It was, you know, that there's speech that's not covered by hate speech and it's not terrorism. So they literally defined it as speech that can create an environment of harm for minority groups. And so, well, like, what speech can create an environment of harm? Like, that's just completely open to interpretation. I mean, even the examples they were using, it's like, if you talk about ethnic overrepresentation or you talk about historical events and you're not saying it in a way that's hateful and you're not saying it in a way that's targeting a certain group, even then they can just declare that to be illegal and shut you down because they can interpret that this will potentially create an environment of harm. And I mean, if you think of like the myriad of ways that that could be interpreted, like what could create an environment of harm? Maybe talking about history will create an environment of harm. Maybe, you know, certain jokes will create an environment of harm. You know, it's like, we're at the stage now where the law is something that's so ill-defined that it's just going to be completely up to whoever's in power. And obviously we know who's in power and you see what the point of this is. You know, they don't want to put in legislation. We're just going to ban white people standing up for themselves. We're just going to bring in a tyrannical police state, and we're just going to make anything illegal that we don't like and throw people in prison that we don't like. But I mean, that's basically within the policy. That's the unspoken policy of these tech giants. It's the unspoken policy of the government. Basically, if they don't like your politics, they'll ban you, they'll unperson you, they'll throw you in jail. And now you're seeing it in the legislation where they found this way to get around it, where they introduced these vagaries, they're introducing terms like environment of harm, secure tolerance, all these kinds of things that if you ask them to define it, you can't get a clear definition. But that's precisely the reason for it existing. It serves power. It can mean whatever power wants it to mean. And as we all know, it's going to mean cracking down on white people.
What do you think to this, Jason? Because we've heard very similar things coming from the Biden administration, haven't we? They are really cracking down on people's right to protest and almost making it illegal for white people to say anything positive about their own ethnic group. How do you think parallels can be drawn between what we're seeing in Britain and what we're seeing in America?
Well, what we can see, and that's a great question, Mark, and folks, remember, if you want to participate in the stream today, please use the entropy link that we have dropped into the live chat. But it's like, this is the way I see it. This is a really positive thing, actually. When we see these laws that are being written increasingly plainly, I guess, you can take any of the laws, and this is how the anti-whites have gotten us to where we are today, taken our far healthier generations of white people from where they were to where they ended up and then to where we are today, simply by the power of interpretation. If you are in charge and you can interpret a law, then you can make it mean whatever you want if you're intelligent enough. And they have been intelligent enough. And their lesser intelligent members have been obsequious when it comes to the dictates of the more intelligent anti-whites. And so they went from a very intelligent and effective white erasure across the West to something that is becoming less intelligent, more obvious. And there are a couple reasons for that. One is that power, hubris, does that. Once you have so much power, you fear less and less the group that you are victimizing, Western kind. Then you speak more plainly. And the other thing is that their ranks are being populated increasingly with people who are not as intelligent as their most intelligent members, but who are there simply because they are a particular race or sex or what have you. But writing these laws so that it's in my mind, the way I see this is, it's sort of like if we could visualize two different colored gases being pressed against each other and having different densities, so that you see in one place a surge and then in another place a surge of the other gas back and forth. It's this interplay of ideas and people's concepts, and we've gotten to this point where they have the power to write these laws. They bother at the moment to write them so that they are extraordinarily subjective, when all along it's always just been anti-white. If we could just focus on the fact that everything they're doing is anti-white, instead of, well, today, you know, tomorrow they will say that it is openly illegal for white people. I mean, that's where we're headed. So the day before yesterday, we were able to say that tomorrow, which was yesterday, is going to be a place where they're going to write these laws that are so subjective that they could interpret them to mean whatever they want them to mean. That's where we happen to be today. They do prevent in the U.S. and the Biden administration, and this is one of the things that is so very important, and really everybody should hear this around the world, because the Biden administration is using their international power, the CIA and the like, against folks who care about the white race all around the world. That's why you saw all of the arrests immediately after Biden got into office, because the United States knows everything. They know everything and everyone. There's no hiding. And language is how the law enforcement connect one person and idea to the next. So the names you call yourself, the words you use, they then build out this coding system, and they say, okay, because of the language, the identifiers, et cetera, that this person, this group is using, they fit into this group. And that group might mean, in the United States, targeted violence. And targeted violence list means it's over for you. It means that you're on the verge of losing your right to self-defense, right to travel, et cetera. And so for those in the U.S., and I have to say, it's perhaps different around the world, but for those in the U.S. who believe that calling themselves a white nationalist means whatever it means, you need to think again about that. And I've been talking about this for a long time. In the past, you might make the argument that, well, of course, the anti-whites in the media are going to say, well, you are conflated with this other group over here. But now, ladies and gentlemen, it is the law enforcement. It is like calling yourself a member of a crime syndicate family now, to use those identifiers. They will take you and your name and your identity, and they will put it over into the category of terrorist, etc. And then you will end up on these lists. So they already are moving to prevent us, and they have successfully. Even over this past summer, you saw what they did in the U.S. with the protests, where they said one week it was anti-white protests under whatever name they want to call it, who cares? And that was perfectly legitimate. It was perfectly fine. The health issue wasn't going to be an issue. But the very next week, the white people get out to protest, losing our rights, losing our hard-won liberties that are being stolen by these anti-whites. And they say it is a major health crisis. Of course they're going to do that. Of course they're going to say that it's a threat to national security. I mean, January 6th, Patriots Day, January 6th, they said was an attempt to an insurrection to take over to the government of the United States, when it could not have been anything further from the case. So they are going to do what they, the anti-whites are going to do when it comes to having a protest. This is absolutely despicable that they are now in a situation where they're saying anything that annoys us is something that we can jail you on. They will just say tomorrow that anything that's white positive, you go to jail for. That's why we need to be using the words that defeat the anti-whites in the minds of our brothers and sisters, rather than in the minds of the anti-whites. And the final thing is keep yourself out of jail or out of losing your rights, folks. If you're in the United States listening to this, you are going on lists. FBI are going to people's houses. They are taking their computers. They are taking their phones from them. They're not screwing around in the U.S. anymore. Don't think that you're going to just be edgy and get away with it. And anybody that is getting away with it in the public eye is because they're working with them. And I pass it back.
Thank you. I think it's difficult. I do agree with what you're saying in essentially staying out of trouble. But at some point, I don't know what your opinion is on this or what Keith's opinion is. You have to draw a line and you have to say that we're not moving back from this line. I mean, where do we go from here? You know, obviously, there's people who say you shouldn't talk about the disproportionate power wielded by Zionists. Okay, well, we'll give that one up. We shouldn't talk about racial differences. Okay, we'll give that one up. You shouldn't talk then about legal immigrants. So we give that one up. Well, we shouldn't talk about demographics either. And before you know where you are, you're nothing more than one of these centrist conservatives who are simply talking endlessly about illegal immigration, which is absolutely pointless, because as soon as the government gives all the illegal immigrants amnesty, they apparently become Americans. You can't campaign against them anymore anyway. So you've been defeated by your own asinine logic, or lack of logic is, you know, the reality. And I understand what you're saying, Jason, but before we go to the questions, because the entropy is open, you can still super chat. We've got another hour of the show. We're going to start doing questions now, and all donations are very much gratefully received. I'll just pop the link into the Trovo chat. If Jason can do the same on the DLive chat, that would be very much appreciated. And you can also watch through Entropy. There is a stable stream on Entropy. I know there's been a bit of buffering on Trovo. I can actually see that from the studio here, so my apologies. That's down to Trovo, not down to StreamYard. But yeah, Keith, what do you think about this? How far do we retreat? Where do we draw the line in the sand?
Well, I mean, I think there's ways to approach it intelligently without, you know, what people call optics cooking or anything, or abandoning your beliefs. I mean, I like what you're doing in PA in terms of community building. And I really think that's the way forward from now on. You know, I think right now the whole system is set up that they want us to kind of go for the centers of power. They want us to, you know, they want us to do the big spectacles. They want us to do the January 6th things. They want us to sort of fall for the easy bait. I think what they really don't want us to do is community building, is, you know, forming relationships, friendships, forming our own infrastructure, having our own ways of supporting each other. And I think, you know, I think there is kind of a realization among people lately that that probably is the best way forward, because, you know, as you both recognize right now, you know, we have nothing. You know, it's all in the enemy's hands, all of the infrastructure, all of the media, the financial services, the intelligence services. And in a sense, you know, any kind of public spectacle, or anytime you enter into the system that they've laid out for you to gain power, you're kind of playing a losing game. So I think there's a lot of positives going forward in terms of a more of a community-based approach. You know, not sort of less of a tendency to kind of try and give the system a bloody nose, and more of a tendency to focus on your own growth, on supporting each other. And yeah, I mean, ultimately, you have to have a radical worldview. You have to have something that can moralize people. And I think there's still a way for us to present our ideas, and there's still a way for us to organize without having to abandon any of our core beliefs.
I agree. I think community building for us is central. I think one of the best things that we do is the hikes, the litter picks, all things like that, that actually bring people together, or specifically bring people together in a way where they're helping other communities. I think they're really, really positive. Personally, for me, the line is in the sand is the demographic issue. I think if we stopped talking about that, if it got to the point where a nationalist group stops talking about demographics, I think at that point, you either have to be willing to go to jail to make a point, or you might as well pack up your bags and call it a day. Because where do you stand if you can't stand on that issue as a nationalist? I don't know what you two think. I mean, where's your line in the sand, Jason?
My line in the sand is the victimization of our people. So we're able to talk about all of the subjects in which Western kind are victimized and take a stand against all of those positions by taking the stand where we are victimized. So every single thing, crime, and even more than what is typically talked about, we go deeper than that. We don't just talk about crime and talk about immigration or things that might, those sorts of things that are plain to see for most. Those sorts of things that harm our people. But we go deeper. We say that even if these folks were 100% law-abiding, moral, wonderful, and many of them, of course, are going to be of other races, that once they achieve the numbers and the strength, et cetera, to feel confident, to project their biospirit, their instinct, that's the easiest way to understand it, onto our environments. They change our environments to suit themselves and therefore change our environments in ways that are uncomfortable for us, that cause discomfort, that causes disharmony. So we're able to take a stance on every single thing that victimizes Western kind without retreating a single jot. It is a matter of, I think, in many of these cases, of speaking in a way that empowers the anti-white with premises that create thought chains that enable them to win every discussion, as opposed to talking about things with premises that create thought chains that enable us to win discussions. And when I talk about winning discussions, where it matters most is when we're bringing over our brothers and sisters to support our ideas, our concepts, to no longer be anti-white, to no longer villainy signal that they are anti-white. That's where it matters. I mean, yeah, we get a lot of joy out of defeating an anti-white in an argument. Who doesn't, you know, for the first time in your life, and to make them look like the bad guy in the story because they're the one who wants to victimize you, your people, your creations, your civilization. Let them hold those reins. And when it comes to specific titles and things like that, where it used to be just an issue of the media, the anti-whites in media calling you some anti-white slurs, in the United States at least, it now is law enforcement. So it can be a judge and a jury deciding whether or not you're going to have any freedom simply based on an identifier. And that would be a very unintelligent way to go down. And it would not be effective for white well-being to take a stand on, like, the name, for example, in any of these names in the United States. To say white power in the United States is you instantly get on the FBI's radar and they start a file on you. Why would anybody want to do that? You can be out, you can be free, you can be bringing love, hope, and redemption to our brothers and sisters and protecting our most vulnerable members. Rather than using a word, a name, a title, a saying that is instantly going to undermine your ability to do that. For what? So that's where my line is. Anything that harms, victimizes Western kind is nothing goes beyond that line.
You see, my worry is that we're going to make all these concessions and then they're going to put us in the gulag anyway. that's my worry. Anyway, we'll go on to the questions. Thank you to everyone who's donated so far. And as I said, there's still plenty of time to donate. Jason's going to put the entropy link in the chat. Bailiff Basher gave $25. Thank you very much for the generous donation. He said, "Hi, Mark. I see that the UK forces continue to dumb down its fighting effectiveness by not only imposing females and wokeness into its combat arms, but also by replacing fighting forces with AI and drones. God forbid if we ever had to lock horns with the beast from the east in conventional warfare. Best wishes to all at PA." Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I've seen this with both America and the UK. And I think this is really actually quite an interesting point to make, especially today, because there were some rather foolish nationalists or so-called nationalists that were saying that people should support Biden instead of Trump. And today we've seen Biden say Putin's a killer. And he said, well, in fact, he called him a killer with no soul and said, we'll see shortly the price he's going to pay. So Biden seems to be on the warpath and he seems to be set on this collision course with Putin and Russia. But what you're seeing of the American military is becoming a complete joke. I mean, the only way America has any chance of defeating other nations is either through its air force or through drone attacks. There is no way that the American military, probably not now and definitely not in the next few decades, would be able to win a ground war or sustain any form of occupation because its troops simply won't be up to it. And if you look at the discipline and the order and the strength that you see in the Chinese and the Russian military, it's leagues ahead. And ultimately, if you are still relying on manpower, if you're still relying on ground forces or occupation or, house-to-house fighting, which at some point you would have to do, I'm not sure America would be effective anymore. I mean, they're so busy flying LGBT flags, doing silly TikTok dances and getting females on board. I think they've lost what made them great. What do you guys think to this? Do you think the UK and the US are still going to be serious military powers, or do you think the race to the bottom will kill their supremacy eventually?
Well, I saw something as well. Boris Johnson is putting like 40% increase in the Trident missile system. They're getting into neocon mode again. But I don't think it will actually hurt them that much. That, you know, obviously, you know, the military is really deteriorating in terms of, yeah, they've got like pregnant women and transgenders and so on. But you know, it seems like the warfare of the future actually will be drones and robots and so on. That seems to be the direction it's going, that there'll be very little actual human involvement. But in terms of Russia and China, I mean, where they're actually losing out to these countries is, even though the US spends like over $1 trillion a year in the military, there's been kind of there's an interesting book called The Real Revolution in Military Affairs by a Russian writer, where he talks about this development where the Russians have actually like vastly surpassed the US in terms of missile development, and they've developed hypersonic missiles that can't be detected by radar. And what this means is, you know, they're going to sell these to Iran, and it's going to mean that basically the way that America has achieved dominance through its navy, through its aircraft carriers, is going to be made redundant, because Iran will have the capability, if it's ever attacked by the US, you know, the US would be reliant on aircraft carriers to sustain its air force. It'd have the power with hypersonic missiles to just wipe out these aircraft carriers, and it'd be immune from missile detection systems. So it's interesting, even though Russia has like a fraction of the budget of the US, same with China, they've been directing their resources intelligently. They've been focusing on areas where they can sort of overcome the US, even with a fraction of their budget. And, you know, I think it kind of shows the difference between countries that are run by a nationalist elite, that are operating a realist foreign policy, that are trying to achieve a level of dominance on the international stage and trying to sort of protect their people's interests, versus somewhere like the US, where you have all these interests of the military industrial complex, you've a large deep state, you've these companies like Lockheed Martin that sort of feed off the government teat. And so it's interesting that the next sort of revolution in military affairs, and what kind of might push the US back in some ways, will be these developments coming out of Russia and China.
I would say that the United States and the UK military, the actual troops on the ground, they can be garbage. The reality is we have actually many decades ago slipped into a new type of, I guess, global control and warfare. And what we've seen, even in over those decades where they have implemented troops on the ground, was just primarily for profit. The United States, and I can't say specifically for the UK as well, but the United States has the ability to launch missiles from many thousands of miles away, tactical nukes, and bunker bombs and assassinate everyone that is in leadership to wipe out entire militaries. Nobody has anything remotely close to the Star Wars ability to shoot down incoming missiles that the United States has. And still, that's not very good. And there's not only that, but you have the issue of you can bring a country to its knees. You can bring a rulership of a country to its knees without having to even shoot anything at that country. And that is by using your powers on the countries with which that country has to do business. And you, that can be militarily, it can be economically. So drones and et cetera are making the human being on the battlefield redundant. And the only way it would really become important again is if there were an all-out, say, nuclear war and all of the missiles were launched. And then you have the aftermath of the fighting there. I don't think the United States would wait for a all-out nuclear war with, I don't know, say China, for example. It would go right away with the powers that it has to knock out the leadership of the country. Iran the same way. If they do go at warfare, if they do conduct warfare the traditional way, then it'll be primarily for profit of making more weaponry and sending more white men into the battlefield, because it's still the case, at least in the U.S., that the combat roles are vastly proportionally composed of white males. And so those are the ones that end up getting their limbs blown off, losing their manhood, their sight, etc., and not able to have families, not able to be productive when they come back. And so I could see them using ground forces for that purpose.
Oh, interesting thoughts there. Interesting thoughts there. Glenn the Chinaman gave $5 and said, Keith, there was an op-ed in the Washington Examiner that said without Irish Americans, the US would never have won World War II. It said that the Irish Americans are willing to die to fight war with China over Taiwan. What is your opinion on this? Happy St. Patrick's Day.
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure if there's a... there's an appetite for war with Taiwan among Irish Americans. I don't know. I'm pressing X to doubt on that one. I'm not sure anyone has an appetite for war with Taiwan except neocons.
Okay, thank you. Well, Glenn the Chinaman then gave another $10. Thank you very much. And he said, I have never been happier to be a Taiwanese immigrant living in undisclosed city in Japan. The Japanese media has been talking about the possible invasion of Taiwan by the CCP and how the US will intervene to stop them. A, will the US start a war with China over Taiwan? B, will the US win it? And then he says the Zionist occupational government won't allow Taiwan to, won't allow Japan to rearm. My opinion on this, if China seriously rolled into Taiwan, I do not believe that America would dare do anything about it. And I don't think they'd do anything about it for three reasons. Firstly, it's one thing bullying people like Saddam Hussein or throwing bombs at the Middle East. It's another thing attacking another global superpower that has submarines, aircraft carriers, ICBMs, nuclear-armed submarines, and essentially has more troops on the ground than any other nation. What's more, you have to look at China's technology. And most of China's technology is America's technology, because there was a scandal a few years ago where China stole more or less all of America's military secrets. Or if they didn't directly, I'm sure America's greatest ally will have stolen America's military secrets and sold them to China. And you know who I'm talking about. So firstly, I don't think America would dare actually go toe-to-toe with China. It would mean mutually assured destruction. There's no way they would do it. So if China rolled in somewhere, America would just have to talk a good game. Secondly, China owns huge, huge amounts of American real estate, American debt, American institutions. America wouldn't be in a position where they could just seize those assets. And in today's world, you couldn't do what happened in the Second World War. You couldn't just arrest all Chinese Americans as they arrested Japanese Americans in the Second World War. There'd be a complete outcry. That couldn't be done. And finally, America completely relies on China for its consumer goods. I know many of the consumer goods that America enjoys so much are sold by Japanese companies such as Sony and Nintendo, but and Korean companies as well, like Samsung. But the fact is, even American companies like Microsoft and Apple produce everything in China. Everything is made in China. So you would have a revolution in America on the streets when entitled brats couldn't get their iPhone or, you know, Xbox One X or PS5. China has got America by the short and curlies in every sense. I think if China rolls into Taiwan, which I don't think it's going to do, I think it'll keep inching towards it, but I'm not sure they're going to do that immediately. But if they did, I don't think America could do anything about it. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I agree with all that. I mean, just generally, I mean, as Jason was saying as well, I mean, I think the talk of nuclear war is a bit ridiculous, to be honest. The talk of, like, that there's going to be a full-scale war between nuclear powers. I mean, if China and America actually went to war and unleashed their nuclear arsenal on each other, it would be like the end of life as we know it on Earth. You know, if that was ever going to happen, it would have happened during the Cold War. So I think people have sort of old memes and themes about warfare. You know, there hasn't been a major war between states, really, I guess, since the Iraq War, unless maybe you count the sort of proxy war between Russia and Ukraine. But warfare is fundamentally changing, and it's a lot more now about narratives and about winning the populace, which is an interesting development. And I think this is related to, you know, in terms of taking on China, there isn't going to be a full-scale conflict. But as you say, you know, China has been openly stealing American military secrets. You know, they stole the F-35 fighter jet and built an exact copy, which was, you know, America's big proud project that they'd put billions of dollars into. But I think what you will see is more of a focus on narratives, more of a focus on the internet. You know, you saw this already with Trump banning TikTok. I think you see it with how much the tech companies are taking control of the narrative. You know, I mean, all of these tech companies, Google and Facebook, got startup capital from the CIA. They're heavily entrenched in the deep state. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see more of that, if you see things like Trovo getting banned, if you see this kind of proxy warfare done over the internet, done about intelligence between the US and China. But yeah, the main thing is, as you said, they're so interlocked, their economies. I mean, the modern China is basically a creation of Wall Street. It just doesn't make any rational sense for anyone on either side to go into open conflict like that.
Also, one other thing, knowing the West, our governments are probably, they're probably so corrupt and so stupid that our entire telephone network and infrastructure is probably built and paid for by a Chinese company. So if we ever did get into some form of conflict, I mean, you can just imagine, you know, the UK government or the American government farming our nuclear power stations out to China or something. So if there was a conflict, they'd literally just push a button, switch off our power. We'd all be sat there sucking our thumbs in the dark as they bombed us with complete impunity. Do you have anything to add, Jason?
No, that was both of you brilliant. I love it, and it's 100% true.
Glenn the Chinaman gave another $3. Thank you very much, Glenn. And he said, my name is not a slur. It is the literal translation from Chinese, China and man, Chinese Chinaman. Did the man who shot up the massage parlor get upset that he didn't get a happy ending? Well, thank you for that, Glenn. I'm sure he did. We've had enough of the happy ending talk now. I sniggered all through Jason's rather powerful speech, and everyone in the chat was making me laugh. They want me to rage on a Sunday night, but laugh on a Wednesday night. Well, I'm telling you this, I shall do neither. Serena JB, lovely to see you. Serena gave £5. Thank you very much. And she said, huge fan of Keith's work. I can see that no white guilt celebrates St. Patrick's Day. But she asks, does Keith celebrate St. Patrick's Day?
Well, I would if we weren't in the most draconian lockdown in the world. I mean, I don't know if you know this, but Ireland has been in full lockdown since the beginning of January, level 5. You can't go even 5 kilometers outside your own house. It's the longest lockdown. It's the most brutal. And the interesting thing is, I mean, we don't have any lower cases than countries that, that haven't done lockdowns. We know after a year it makes no difference. We're not doing any better than any other country. But they still persist with it, and you still can't question the logic of it. I remember a year ago on St. Patrick's Day, you actually came on my channel, America, and this was all very new to us. We didn't quite know what to make of it. But I mean, at the time, you know, there was discussion about, oh, should we do the Swedish model or should we do lockdowns? And I mean, the way it was presented was that lockdowns would last 2 or 3 weeks, that flatten the curve, that basically eliminate COVID, and then, you know, we get back to normal. But I think if you polled people and you said, you know, if you told them honestly that there was going to be a year of this, I don't think anyone would have agreed to this. So yeah, I mean, hopefully next year we can make up for it in terms of celebrations. But yeah, a bit grim this year. And of course, you also have the police arresting people, 16 arrests today.
Yeah, it is grim, and we've got to work together more, Keith. I think I'm going to talk to you at the end, actually, when we're off camera, about something I want to work on with you. So I think we should definitely work together more often. Flying Dutchman.
By the way, anyone that's not Irish wearing green is, I'm afraid, that's cultural appropriation.
Flying Dutchman gave $25 and said, thank you very much for the generous super chat. He said, Mark, why did you ask Jason to co-host your show? Jason, why did you accept? Well, I will tell the full story. We originally had a show called This Week on the Alt-Right. It was run by myself and Tara McCarthy. We were the joint hosts of that. And as the show was building up steam, I remember when we did our first show, we had about 300 or 400 people watching. And it was a good show, but Jason started to do The After Party, a show that worked alongside it, doing different interviews following up the main show. Tara left the show and she handed her sort of stake in it to Bree. And myself and Bree were working together very closely. We did 2 or 3 shows each week and we were always in constant contact. Unfortunately, Bree had a bit of a family problem, and sadly it pulled her out of the scene, and she just didn't, because of the issues she had to go back into full-time work, which was completely understandable. But her contribution during her time in nationalism was fantastic. She was a lovely girl, and I do miss her. I miss Tara as well. And Jason, and it left me in a bad position, because she said she literally couldn't do another single show. And at the time, I couldn't stream on my YouTube, and Jason stepped in and said, well, I'll stream it for you. So Jason became the new Bree, and here we are, 160 odd episodes later, maybe more, and Jason is still the co-host. So Jason, yeah, you tell your side of the story.
No, it was a fantastic. It worked out beautifully. It was a great example. I think that everybody across the white sympathetic spheres should really look at how we came together and made this happen and see it as the kind of thing that we should all be doing all the time. I had been at a conference or two with Mark when he was in the States. We never spoke, but I was in a group conversation at one of the conferences. Mark and I were both in the group, and I knew who he was from way back in the day when there was a group called Friends of the BNP, and in the United States, and I think it might have been elsewhere as well. We didn't get an opportunity to talk, I think, other than to say hello. But I knew that he was he cared about our people, and he cared about our people in a way that was comporting with my morality. I heard that suddenly the show was abandoned, not in a malicious way, but abandoned. And there was no way that I was going to allow that to just have a hiccup, make it look unprofessional, whatever it was. And who knows, maybe not be able to come back for weeks. I mean, we did stream for, I think, a few months on my channel, the show. And so anyhow, when the opportunity arose, I absolutely leapt at that to make sure that we could, you know, somebody had to man the oar, and that's all there was to it. So we had to keep rowing, and somebody had to man the oar. And so we jumped right in. And because our heart is in the right place when it comes to our people, we don't have to have the exact same idea, and because we're both adult men, we don't have to have the exact same ideas about this path this day or that path that day, and yet still able to work together perfectly. So that's how we have to be. There are other groups out there who are able to behave that way, and we need to be able to do the same if we're going to succeed. But it's been fantastic ever since.
It certainly has. Well, thank you for that. We have $5 from Sheen Lanton. Thank you very much. He said, "Hi, Mr. Collett. This is a question for all of you. As a white positive Palestinian, I'm put off by the anti-white position of many pro-Palestinian groups who call Israel white supremacists. Why do you think they take this view? Thank you and God bless." Well, it's a very simple answer. They take that view because they gain the majority of the support and funding from leftist, liberal, anti-white groups here in the West. You will see there is a massive correlation between support for anti-white policies and support for Palestine in Western nations. So somebody like Jeremy Corbyn, who is clearly anti-white, pro-transgender, pro all kind of wokeism, is also a major supporter of Palestine. And these people have secured much funding for the pro-Palestine cause. So I think Palestinian groups have tended to side with Western leftists because they've helped them the most, really. I mean, obviously, I do feel for the Palestinian people, and I'm sure many people in the audience do. What's your take on this, Keith? Why do Palestinians tend to side with these anti-whites?
Yeah, I think it's very simple, actually. It's kind of similar to what we were saying with the Asians earlier. I mean, the elites in the West are pro-Israel for kind of obvious reasons. The majority of regular folks in Europe especially are pro-Palestinian, and so the way they get around that isn't by trying to make them pro-Israel so much as it's just turning the narrative into another thing that benefits them in terms of framing it as another struggle against white supremacy. So yeah, I mean, that narrative furthers elite interests on the home front and gets Jews away from criticism. So I think it's kind of obvious why they've made that the official narrative.
Do you have anything to add, Jason? No.
No, yeah. I concur with that, yeah.
Glenn the Chinaman gave another $5, and he said, "Your average working class Asian in Chinatown are not blaming whites. The march against white supremacy was organized by Jews and half Chinese Jews," and he's sent a link from the forward, which I can't drop into the DLive chat for obvious reasons, but I'm going to pop it in the private chat here so Jason can pop it in all the chats. There you go. Well, thank you very much, Glenn. Very much appreciated. Peter Hansen, gave $25. Thank you very much. He said, "The Chinese didn't invent gunpowder. They discovered it. The Chinese emperor, don't ask me which one, ordered his chief alchemist to make an elixir of eternal life. The alchemist then went to his lab and started mixing everything he had, and one day, boom." Well, thank you very much. I didn't actually know that. Thank you for the generous super chat. Peter Hansen also then gave $75. Thank you very much for the extreme generosity. It's very much appreciated. And he said, "Here's another $75 just because." Well, thank you very much. That's very much appreciated. Jacob Patriotic gave £5. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, "Hello, Mark, Jason, and Keith. Mark, do you have any intentions to write another book in the future?" Well, thank you for that, Jacob. I get asked this more and more all the time, and I still get regular emails from people who are still just reading The Fall of Western Man, which is very heartening. In fact, if you want to read thefallofwesternman.com, you can go to www.thefallofwesternman.com, and it is completely free to download. You can obviously buy it in hardback and paperback too if you wish, but there's a completely free copy there for you if you want it as a PDF download, which you're free to print and reproduce in limited quantities to pass to friends and family. I took a lot out of me writing that book. I didn't realize how much time and effort until I looked back on it. It's like writing a book's a bit like running a race. When you're locked in there and you're actually running that sort of half marathon or 10K, you're not really aware of how much effort and energy you're putting into it until you cross that line and you feel your heavy legs and your heart beating and you realize how much you've actually put into it. It's kind of funny because since I started doing YouTube, I say YouTube, I mean video creation, and please, shilling my Odyssey, please, please go and follow my Odyssey. I am massively behind in numbers of subscribers. I've really only got onto that recently, so I've only got 1,000 or so. If we can get me up to a, you know, a good 3,000 or 4,000 over on Odyssey, that would really, really help me. That's Odyssey or Library. But since I started video creation, I have been doing a video every week since sometime in 2016. Now, that's a long time, and most of those videos have been scripted videos, and I look back at them now, and some of them are 3,000 words plus. Some of them are only about 1,000 words, minimum about 1,000, but there's hundreds of these videos. So I've really written enough to fill at least another book, if not two more books, but it would just be about knowing what to write about, and ultimately... My last book was a real, or my only book, was a passion project. And I don't want to write for the sake of it. One day I might do, but at the moment I am so busy working full time. I've neglected all of my commercial interests over the last year, giving everything I've got to PA and spending, you know, a large sum of money helping to fund PA. It takes a lot out of me. And frankly, at the moment, I just don't have the time to write a book. I mean, a typical day for me starts at just after 6 o'clock in the morning. And I can spend up to 2 hours or more sometimes answering emails from people who just want help or just want to speak to somebody or just to, you know, expressing that it's good to have found this community. It all takes time. And to sit and write a book, you need a lot of time. And I had more time on my hands before PA, before, you know, PWR, before all the things we're doing now. And I just don't have that time. But one day, maybe. One day, maybe. Yiz the Unit gave $3. Thank you very much. And said, happy St. Patrick's Day. White lives matter. No white guilt. Well, thank you, Yiz. 156 viewer gave £5. Thank you very much. And he said, decolonization is a euphemism for genocide. It certainly is. I also like things, you know, colonization. The idea of colonization is that somebody has taken over something that didn't belong to them. Well, physics, you know, astronomy, science, chemistry, biology, they're all white things. We can't decolonize them because we haven't taken them over. We've invented them. We can't decolonize them because they were no one else's in the first place. Reformed Against Lockdowns gave £3. Thank you very much, my friend. He said, is Keith willing to build relations with British nationalists who are Ulster unionists, especially in relation to opposing globalism and lockdowns? Well, that's a question and a half, Keith, especially on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, it's put me in an awkward position on Patrick's Day. Yeah, no, I mean, there's a solidarity with anyone that's against the globalist elites and their plan. I think we're all united in that, and to a certain extent, certain old grudges have to be put behind. But I mean, in terms of like uniting with them, I mean, I don't know how that would manifest. To be honest, I think it's the best model is for people to unite and organize and build communities among their own people, among their own sort of national groups. So, I mean, you know, maybe like rhetorically something could come out of that, but I don't think anything real world is really going to manifest from that.
Well, thank you for the very honest answer. An Arab social nationalist, our good friend. It's always good seeing you in the chat, my friend. You've become a feature here recently, and you had some very amusing takes during the Schindler's List review. He says, Keith, I miss upsetting PJ Watson with you on Twitter. Can you comment a bit on Sinn Féin? I come from a very pro-Irish household, and Sinn Féin has always been based. But lately, I am alarmed.
Well, I don't know about always been based. I mean, I think since really the late 80s, it's kind of been subverted. There was always this pattern with Sinn Féin where they'd started, you know, there's been so many splits with Sinn Féin, but I mean, generally the pattern was that started out as an overtly nationalist, conservative organization. You can read something like a document called Éire Nua from the 1970s that was put out by IRA Sinn Féin at the time. And it's like an explicitly ethno-nationalist, like almost like third positionist document that's advocating for not only national independence, but like economic independence and a nationalist economic policy and all these kinds of things. And there was always this tendency. I mean, you know, the members would go end up in prison and they'd get into third worldism and Marxist theory. And It was really subverted in the late 80s, especially by someone like Jerry Adams, Martin McGuinness. And I mean, I think a lot of their members kind of still see it as a nationalist party, or a lot of them kind of assume that it's a nationalist party. But for quite a while, they've been sort of openly leftist and really no different from any other leftist party in Europe, except for maybe, they won't, they won't renounce old IRA violence, and are sort of rhetorically anti-British. So it gives a feeling of some kind of veneer of nationalism, but it's been gone for a long, long time.
Thank you very much. Well, that's the end of the Super Chats, the paid Super Chats. If you want to send a donation, there is still 20 minutes of the show left. But we have some other questions. Martin Jones asks, and this one's for me, should PA drop all talk of the JQ, or is it something that can help us win hearts and minds? Well, thank you for the question, Martin. I have been told many times throughout my life that there are certain things I shouldn't talk about, and the list of things I shouldn't talk about include the JQ. It includes demographic change. It includes race. It includes terms like white genocide. I remember at one point somebody said to me, you will never, ever get terms like the Great Replacement and white genocide into the mainstream. And you've heard terms like this now used in all the mainstream newspapers, on mainstream conservative shows, and they've become part of the narrative. Why have they become part of the narrative? Because we have pushed them. We have popularized them. We've shifted the Overton window. When I started PA with Laura, people said to me, look, Mark, just talk about anti-immigration. Don't talk about demographics. It's too much. It'll scare people away. Well, now, Britain First, for Britain, and every other nationalist party are talking about demographics, because PA pushed the envelope on demographics and forced the conversation. And I believe when you talk about the JQ, I believe that talking about minorities holding disproportionate power in the West is something that's extremely important. It is not only honest, but it is important. You could just as easily say, is it counterproductive to talk about things such as grooming, to talk about things such as sexual offences against the indigenous population? After all, talk of things such as sexual offences makes people cringe. The Muslim community have a lot of power locally. Shall we drop that? Shall we stop talking about that? You know, the left say that's a conspiracy theory too, and that we're blowing things out of proportion. You know, where do you draw the line? If something is a truth, and if that truth is something that affects our people in a negative way, we have the right to talk about it. And we have gone into battlegrounds, ideological battlegrounds, that we were told were unwinnable. And we've won every single battle, and we have forced others to adopt our talking points. That doesn't mean we stop pushing. That means we push a little harder because we're actually getting somewhere. The fact of the matter is, if we don't talk about the issues that affect our people, we aren't going to get anywhere. And if we do get somewhere with a load of hidden agendas, when we get to the somewhere we want to be, we're never, ever going to be able to initiate any of those secret agendas, because the people we got there with will say, well, where's all this come from? This isn't why we were on board with you in the first place. Why are you talking about this now when you haven't talked about it for the last 15 years? That's not how politics works. And I'm pretty sure that if we dropped talking about grooming gangs, demographics, white genocide, the disproportionate power wielded by certain minorities, that all the wonderful people who have supported this community for so long would pretty much turn their backs on us, and for good reason. I am not selling out. I'm never going to sell out. And I am proud of the fact that we've pushed this. And if people don't want to push the truth, if people want to hide from the truth on demographics or white genocide or replacement or the JQ or grooming gangs or whatever, there are other parties that you can go and support that hide all of those things. But I can tell you this, those are not the kind of exciting group that we are. And I think it's very important that we hold on to our values. What has cooking ever got nationalism in the past? Where's it ever got nationalism? Nowhere. What do you think about this, Keith? Do you think we should sell out? Do you think we should cook? Should we stop saying the truth?
No, I agree with you. I mean, you know, for one thing, is obviously groups that do cook on that issue often end up being bought out and selling out on all their other points as well. You know, Tommy Robinson is an example. I mean, you can't get away from it. I mean, if you're a nationalist, it's not just about demographics and the huge number of foreigners in your country. It's also about who's controlling your society and who's controlling your destiny. And there's clearly an ethnic component to that. And if you ignore the ethnic component, then your analysis isn't going to be any different from the analysis of a liberal or a leftist. So that is something that separates us. At the same time, you know, I can see, like, there are people that they make, you know, they get very obsessive and they make sort of due hatred the center of their worldview rather than love with their own people. And sometimes people go too far with that. I mean, I had someone the other day tell me that, like, Putin was like, he's worse than Biden and he's like a Zionist Jewish shill. And it was because, like, he, you know, they did like a picture of him visiting Israel or something. So I do think, like, people go weird places with it sometimes. But I mean, at the end of the day, I just think you can't get away from it if you want to make sense of the world. And I think most people that ended up here recognize that at some point.
Well, thank you. And I just got to point this out as well. Okay. Before we move on to the next question. The majority of people who say that we shouldn't talk about a certain Middle Eastern tribe wielding disproportionate power in the West are the same group that talk about every single Muslim in a position of power in the West. So what they're saying is that we should talk about all of the Muslims who aren't us, who hold power in local government, or local councillors, own the local kebab shop, drive all the taxis. We should talk about all that, but we certainly shouldn't be talking about this other Middle Eastern tribe that hold all these other positions of power that are in fact far, far more powerful than the people running the taxi rank or the kebab shops. You know, it's a, you know, to not talk about the Israel lobby in America is insanity. To not talk about the people running the media is insanity. To not talk about the people who control campaign finance is insanity. To not ask the question as to why every world leader has to go and stand by a wall in Israel with a little hat on is insanity. You know, I might be noticing too many things, but when I notice something, I have to mention it. It's just the way I am. So that's how it is. We have another super chat, $15 from D's Kosher Nuts. Thank you very much. He said, just got my Biden bucks today. Please enjoy some American stimulus. Well, thank you very much. And we're on to non-paid super chats now. Barclay Walsh said, hi, Mark, Keith and Jason. Hello, Barclay. I hope you're staying out of trouble, young lad. And he says, slightly more bizarre question. What do you all think about the Bloomberg video that has recently gone viral, which seems to depict Biden's hand clipping through the microphones? Well, that has been going viral. What do you guys think of that? Because I think, is it a green screen? Is it an optical illusion? I mean, I've seen it. He appears to walk forward, push his hands through a line of microphones that are sort of superimposed in front of him, like it's all for show. Is it for show? Has his health deteriorated so rapidly that he already, you know, he's doing things from his hospital bed? What do you guys think?
I'm not sure what to make of it, to be honest. I did see the footage. Yeah, it looked very suspect. I saw Blackpilled Devin Stack on Twitter then was saying that he actually made a mistake saying that it was a green screen and he thought that there was some other angles that showed that maybe it was kind of an optical illusion. But I don't know, it did look very, very doctored. So I'm not quite sure what to make of it, to be honest.
It looked like an old Nintendo 64 game, you know, where the characters are dead blocky and just pass through other objects. It was really, really surreal. What did you think, Jason?
Something has started. There you go. I found it. Something had started playing music on my. An advert had come up on one of the news channels. I think that when these things happen, and I would caution folks that it's not impossible that the regime would do something like this, but it is more likely than not when something like this happens that the footage has been captured somewhere and then manipulated and then released to make us look stupid. There are videos out there all the time. They pop up all the time that people take of, like, for example, with people not, they'll say, this is a video of people not wanting to get the vaccination. And really, it's a video of something completely different, people running away from, I don't know, hornets or something. So be careful about when you see these things, and because you have a reputation that is going to stick with you, with the folks you speak to. And if you burn your reputation on something that might be silly, might be wrong, then it's going to be hard to convince them of anything else. So you could share it, but just say, you know what, this might be, I might not be seeing it right. And then you'll preserve your reputation.
I don't know why Jason's talking such nonsense. He spent 15 minutes before the show lecturing me on why Biden was a hologram that was controlled by lizard people and that David Icke is 100% correct. He's changed his tune now, though. I'm very disappointed in you tonight, Jason. Obviously, that is a joke, a complete disavowal. Half Pint gave £5. Thank you very much, my friend. And he says, hi, Mark. Do you think the government may meddle with the census to push an agenda? I have a bad feeling that they will inflate the indigenous population percentage to delegitimize our movement. What do you think? I'm not sure. I don't think the government would do that. They've never done that in the past. They've already admitted London is majority, or that whites are a minority in London and Birmingham. So why would they deny it when it happens in other cities? In fact, they celebrate it, don't they? You know, you have major establishment politicians stood there celebrating the fact that London is a place where white Brits are a minority. I think this is too far along the line. They've already tried to say it was a conspiracy theory for years and years, but now it's so obviously not a conspiracy theory. What is their answer to this? Well, quite clearly, their answer is to say the very opposite, that, okay, it is happening, but we should celebrate it. What do you guys think? Do you think they would ever meddle with the census results?
I agree with you on that. I think they're already moving the narrative from it's not happening to it's always been that way or it's a good thing. Yeah, I don't think they'd bother tampering with it, to be honest.
Okay. We have a question here from VM. He says, the government are aiming to vaccinate all adults by summer. How do you plan on dodging the state-enforced jab? And what advice do you give to anyone with a job that might be pressured into this? Well, I say the following. You don't have to take the jab. And if you are already employed, and they try to force you to take the jab or sack you for not having the jab, I am pretty sure that that will breach certain types of government equality and discrimination legislation. What you have to remember is the government were very quick to act with equality laws, but those equality laws are often written in such a way that we can use them to our advantage. And you've just seen the English Democrats do this in the UK, where a guy, I know him, he's a very nice guy. His name is Steve Uncles. He's a stand-up fella, met him on several occasions. He was sacked from a role in the NHS, and they sacked him because he is a member of the English Democrats and he is an English nationalist. Now, if somebody had been sacked for being a member of the Labour Party or a member of the Conservative Party or having a different opinion to people at the NHS, they would have been able to sue. Well, Steve Uncles, he said, well, I'm not taking this. If I'd been anything else and they'd sacked me, I can take them to court. So he took them to court. And the court ruled that it was unlawful for the NHS to discriminate against him. And the ruling was that English nationalism as an ideology is a protected characteristic. Steve Uncles beat the spread. And now, as the law in England is basically, it is passed, but it is then tested in the courts. And when it is tested in the court, the law evolves depending on case studies, depending on how it is applied. And the law can be amended in certain ways, and it is based on precedent. A precedent has been set that English nationalism is a protected characteristic and you can't be sacked for being an English nationalist, just as precedent can be set that it would be discriminatory for anybody to be sacked for not taking the vaccine. And I suggest anyone that is pressured into taking the vaccine, or anyone that is threatened with being sacked for taking the vaccine, gets in touch with me. Now, I help dozens and dozens of people on a weekly basis, and I get lots of people writing to me for legal advice. I've been helping a number of people recently who need legal advice, and I've already been helping a girl who was wrongly fired for refusing to wear her face mask when she had a medical exemption. Now, I can help you if you have these problems. So if you have these problems, don't worry in silence. Write to me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com and I will do my best to help you. But that brings us very close to the end of the show. And yeah, do we have time for one more question? What's the top one? A Celt asked, Noahide laws, how familiar is Patriotic Alternative with these laws and what action is being taken to deal with their introduction into our society? Well, things like that would be looked into if we got into power. At the moment, we're not in a position to do that. The Patriotic Alternative already has a 20-point plan. It's on our website. It shows how we will deal with things in the future. And any foreign group that imports foreign practices into the UK that are detrimental to the indigenous people will be subject to new laws that would deal with anti-white or anti-British discrimination. It's as simple as that. And thank you for that question. So we've done the top three questions from the unpaid chat, which brings us to about the end of the show. I think it's been a really, really entertaining show tonight. We've still got the numbers to come in from Sven. We've had about 1,100 watching across Trovo, DLive and Entropy. And I must apologize. I know that the Trovo stream has been buffering tonight at different times, but there is nothing I can do about that. We're looking forward to when Odyssey starts their streaming service, and hopefully we can move over to there and they will have a good system. They already have a good system of financial incentives based around their own cryptocurrency. So hopefully that will continue to grow. So first and foremost, thank you so much to Keith. It's been great having you here. Stick around after the show so you and I can have a chat. And I've already invited you back for show 100 and you've accepted. So please tell everyone where they can find you and how they can contribute to your excellent work, and give us any final thoughts.
Sorry, I didn't know I was muted. Yeah, I've enjoyed it. That was a great show, I think. And yeah, if anyone wants to give back to the Irish race that has given the world so much, you can go and sub to me on YouTube. I'm actually only 3 subscribers away from 30,000. So you can get me to 30,000 on St. Patrick's Day. That'd be pretty cool. And yeah, sub to all my other stuff. Odyssey is kind of my preferred alternative at the minute. Telegram, I think people should be on there. That's a good alternative. And yeah, any crypto whales can send me some bitcoins or their preferred cryptocurrency, all that good stuff. But yeah, sub to me on YouTube, and thanks for having me on.
Well, it's always a pleasure. And as I said earlier, you stepped in and saved the day quite a while back. And ever since then, you've become one of our favorites. And you're definitely somebody that if I had to choose another panelist to be on every week, you would be at the very top of that shortlist. I think it's always entertaining working with you. Thank you so much. Please support Keith. And he will be back again in a few weeks for episode 100. Now, Jason, my friend, where can people find you? Who's on tap? And give any final thoughts you may have.
Well, they can find me if they want to look really hard in Northern Virginia, right outside Mordor, right across the Potomac. But you can also find me at nowhiteguilt.org, theafterparty.tv. Friday, we have the Golden One with us. You can find him on find that show on No White Guilt on YouTube and how many different 9 different platforms now, I think, that we are on. You can find us, and that will be at 3 p.m. on Friday. It's been a magnificent show. A big happy St. Patrick's Day to every single one of you. enjoy the rest of it, however many hours you have left. Thank you so much for coming on, Keith. You were magnificent. And Mark, of course, our great leader here on PWR, magnificent as well. Look forward to seeing you all next week.
And I've actually just hit 30,000. So even though I'm sober, this is the best St. Patrick's Day ever.
Well, that's a lot coming from an Irish man. He's sober, he's happy, and it's St. Patrick's Day. Absolutely fantastic stuff there. So it has been a really, really good night. I've just had the final numbers from Sven. He says there have been 600. We've had 1,100 on DLive, Trovo, and Entropy, 600 listened on audio, and I'm just adding up the other figure in my head, nearly 1,600 on the video player. So that gives us a grand total of around 3,300 viewers for the show. Absolutely superb. Keith absolutely deserves it. A great turnout and good to see the DLive numbers up again. It's just a shame about Trovo with the buffering. So thank you for being here tonight. I will be back on Friday with my regular video. It's called A Tale of Two Murders. I think it's definitely worth watching. I think if people want more nationalism, hop on over to Jodie Kay's channel. Apparently she did an interview last night with Richard the Lionheart about his epic trek up the UK, or up England, should I say, through England. Please go and have a look at that and support Jodie and Richard the Lionheart. If you would like to send contributions via other means, please write to me at Mark at the Fall of Western Man, or grab my my Bitcoin link, my Monero link, or any of my crypto links, or write to me if you want other crypto addresses. And most importantly, if you're around on Saturday, I am doing a special show on Saturday with a number of European nationalists. It's at midday UK time when we are interviewing and discussing the situation in Syria with a Syrian nationalist. So that is going to be something really special. And if you can do one final favor for me before the night ends, please, please, please look me up on Odyssey and LBRY. I have three channels, Mark Collett Live, Mark Collett, which has got all my scripted videos, and a full channel with the full archive of every single PWR episode. Please, please go and follow me there as well as on BitChute, because I'll be uploading to both of those platforms now. So if either one of them go down, you can always find me wherever I am. And Odyssey is moving to streaming soon. And as they do that, that will be our new home for streams. So very much looking forward to that. So that just leaves me to say thank you to Keith. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to everyone who donated so very generously tonight. It is very, very much appreciated. But most of all, thank you to the 3,300 viewers who stuck with us for 2 hours. This community is absolutely incredible. The numbers are still good despite the massive, massive oppression we're facing. Please, guys, stay safe, look after yourselves, and I'll see you all again soon. Have a great night. See you later, guys.